And now, Ben, Devo, Tech Boys, and Mayors.
Welcome back to the BDSM show. That's Billy and Devo. Talk sports and manliness. As always, I'm Billy.
I'm Devo, and welcome back from our layoff.
Yeah.
Last week was totally my fault.
Well, it was a little both.
I mean, I said I was up, and I was like, you're like, are you up? And I'm like, yeah, I'm up. And then I closed my eyes for like a second.
And then you weren't up.
And then it was 2 a.m. And I was like, okay, I better get up and get my computer, and oh, whoa.
Right. I was long asleep at that point.
2 a.m.? Damn. So,
although, to be fair, that was a Thursday, so.
Yeah, we pushed it. We pushed it a time or two, but I still should have been up.
So. Sure. Didn't help. My son was sick, so I had to change my work schedule for Tuesday, and then.
Yeah, that's right. You flexed it to a late time.
Yeah, and then Wednesday I had marital relations, and by the time that was finished up, Devin was already asleep.
So yeah.
That was my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday was just kind of, it just wasn't meant to be.
And then Friday we were like, you know what? We'll see you on Tuesday.
Right. Yeah, Fridays are impossible because I typically work till midnight on Fridays. So.
And then it's the weekend, and then we're recording 2 days later. What, you know?
Right. That's Heather goes, oh, are you guys recording tonight on Saturday? I was like, the fuck would we be recording tonight for? No. What? Don't be ridiculous.
So we got 2 weeks to catch up on.
Right.
Last weekend, like not this one, but the one before it,
mm-hmm.
took the boy to the movies.
To see...
The Power Rangers.
Right.
It was okay. You saw it, actually, right?
Yes. Yep, we saw it last Thursday.
Did you bring the boy?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And, yeah, right, you're not going to go see it by yourself.
Well, that, yeah, and it was because, you know, he was homesick all week and we wanted to get him out of the house, get him, you know, he'd been cooped up, so get out, do something fun. And
it was an origin story, and, you know, you mentioned that to me, and I'll cut him some slack.
Right. There's the kind of lulls that you might expect with an Origins movie, especially something like Power Rangers, where they're trying to pull in the old crowd that used to watch it way back in the day and also hook the young crowd who they're trying to get interested in it.
Right. They got to resell all that lunchboxes and T-shirts and Netflix deals.
In the $60 Megazord action figure at Target.
Yeah, I thought that the characters were fine. They all had their little flaws, which, you know, made them human.
Right.
I thought Elizabeth Banks was great.
Yes, I love Elizabeth Banks.
Me too. You know what? I don't think I've ever seen anything where I'm like, fucking, that was dumb. And it was a movie with Elizabeth Banks.
There was one, what the hell was it called?
Walk, I heard she went after that.
Walk of Shame or something like that. There was a really dumb premise, but she spent like the entire movie in a short yellow dress, so it was okay.
Well, I would look it up now.
I think she got like her big break, sort of like air quotes big break, in 40-Year-Old Virgin, where she was like the freaky bookstore clerk.
Yes. I hope you got a big trunk.
Right. Right. The one who uses the bathtub nozzle to... You know, mm-hmm. do the deed. Anyway.
As a masturbatory aid.
Right. But I mean, since then, Hunger Games, she's been fantastic in Hunger Games.
And Miri make a porno.
Right. She's been fantastic in everything. So
role model.
I'm a big fan. I really like her. She's gorgeous and she's funny and I think she's a great actress.
Yeah.
Pulled off the kind of over-the-top, creepy, villainous... Rita Repulsa. So, you know, that was good.
Bryan Cranston was in it?
Right, right.
He was the predecessor Power Ranger?
Right, Zordon.
And Bill Hader. was the Alpha.
Alpha 5. Okay. I was going to say, I bet he was Alpha. Yeah. I did enjoy the pink, the original pink and green Rangers coming back at the end.
I didn't even notice, to be honest with you.
They were in the crowd taking pictures and stuff on their cell phones.
Nice.
So there was that. I did enjoy the throwback music when the Zords first came out. And they played like the original theme song.
Go, go, Power Ranger.
I think that was just a corny way to get that out there for nostalgic reasons, because it didn't really fit. Unless they're going to do that next time, too. But
it should be one of their ringtones. I think that would be funny.
Right. It was. I mean, it took a little while to get to the payoff.
So the yellow one was the and I'm air quoting lesbian.
Right.
And did you know, because of that one joke they made about boyfriend, girlfriend?
Right.
That gave it an R rating in Russia.
Not surprising.
Well, I mean, I understand they're homophobes over there.
Yeah, they're very anti-gay.
But that wasn't even... I mean, that was just a joke. It was just busting her balls.
Right. Well, but then she was like, yeah.
My parents don't agree with my lifestyle choices. Well, nobody likes Doc Martens anymore, lady. So, that's it.
It was very subtle. She wasn't an in-your-face type of lesbian. And
she was slightly butch.
She was still kind of steamy.
Dude. Pink Ranger was steamy.
I can't help but notice there was no fervor over the fact that there was a gay character in this, like the Beauty and the Beast movie. And it makes me wonder if it's because the Bible thumpers, at least the male Bible thumpers, are less offended by two chicks kissing than two dudes. I mean, yeah. are there senses...
She didn't kiss a chick, did she?
No, but did the... I didn't see the new Beauty and the Beast. Did the candlestick kiss anybody?
I don't know, but candlestick by itself is pretty phallic.
But, I mean, they all they had to say before anybody even saw the movie was that the character was gay. And the whole South is like, not in my theater. Like, really?
You know, if he's French, I think the French generally are awkwardly feminine.
Right. And one of my buddies on Facebook pointed out the candlestick was, no pun intended, he was flaming in the original.
He was gay in the cartoon.
You know, like, I think he was doing Mrs. Potts or whatever, or one of, like, the duster, the feather duster. But he was flaming. That was clearly a cover. So, not surprised.
She was a beard.
Right. But, I mean... Just think about it. Like, what did you hear about theaters not playing Power Rangers because the Yellow Ranger was a lesbian?
Just Russia.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing anything. Like, not stateside.
Thailand. Not stateside, no.
Not Alabama. Like, they were talking about Beauty and the Beast. Not, you know, Mississippi. In the deep south, they had no problem. Is it because, at least for the old fuddy-duddy men, two chicks kissing more attractive than two men?
Chick homos are all right.
Right.
I mean, not them ones that tape them down and leave the buzz cut.
But anyway, to get away from the political discussion, it was a decent movie, and the payoff was pretty solid at the end. So I think the sequel would be better because they don't have to lay the groundwork. They can, you know, jump right into the action and then come up with a plot line that divides the team, and then they come back together again.
I'm glad they brought in the school bully.
Right.
Early, I thought that was kind of fun.
Sure.
Because, you know, in the TV show, there was when they were at the school, there was always that one fat kid who would
roll around
and troll them.
Yeah, the two skater punks.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool that they brought in a bully for them to vanquish early on.
Right. Right.
Whilst speaking of gay... we went to the Ybor Centro Movie Theater, which is our go-to theater, because it's like a mile and a half away.
Right.
Gay Pride Parade happening. I'm not kidding.
Just happened to be happening when you were going down there?
Yeah. Yep, and we got down there early. Like, I knew the parade was going, so I called the theater. I was like, yo, are you guys still valet parking? And they're like, yeah. I was like, how much is it? He's like, $10. And I was like, shit, well, I guess that's better than... trying to find parking with a parade going on.
Right.
So I valet and we're there early. like 45 minutes early.
Sure.
Maybe an hour. So I was like, hey, Finn, come on. Let's go check it out. You know, let's walk over there.
Oh, boy.
So you know how there's like the bridge that goes over 8th Avenue for Centro?
Right.
We just hung out up there, and he's like, Daddy, what are they doing? You know, it's just, they're not like doing anything like
flaming,
ultra gay. Right. I mean, it's super gay, but not like ultra gay.
Dancing around, like, and
could get arrested.
Small get-ups, yeah. And
so he's like, why? He's like, why is everybody dressed up? And I was like, they're in a club. He's like, what club is it? I was like, it's the Rainbow Club.
Right. Right.
See all the rainbow flags? He's like, oh yeah. He's like, they look like they're having fun. And I was like, yep, they are having a blast, pal.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
And so we just sat there, you know, they had music going, and there was taco stands and all that stuff, and, you know, they were doing their thing. And then we sat there for like 20 minutes just watching.
What you realize, Devin, what you've done now, is you've exposed him to the contagious gay gene in the air. It's airborne, you know.
Yeah, right. I saw one of them cough.
Right. So, I mean, Finn ends up being, you know, gay down the line.
Then we'll know why. You can play this podcast for him.
Right. You have this experience to point to, hey, son, this is why you're castigated at every turn. Because yep. Daddy brought you to a pride parade, and you caught the airborne gay disease that the Bible thumpers are so afraid of.
Like, it didn't faze him, which I loved. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, well, I couldn't understand, like, what gay is. I mean, maybe he knows. I don't know.
Right. Bub told me that he likes girls.
He knows what feminine is.
He thinks it's weird to like boys. And I mean, okay, so he's straight. I'm not going to tell him that it's, you know, right or wrong. But when we cross that bridge, we'll have that discussion. But they're too young to really think, like, why those guys are so wrong.
Because he talks about, you know, a girl in his class all the time.
Right.
All the time. There's more than one kid in his class. There's one that he talks about all the time.
Right. See, Bub's got his best friend, Keegan, but he's got his best friend, Nicole, that's been like right. His best buddy since they were in class together as two-year-olds.
Yep. Juliana is the one he talks about.
And I asked him once if, and I think I have this video on Facebook, I asked him if she was his best friend. He said, yeah. I said, do you love her? He said, yeah. I said, are you guys going to get married? He said, yeah. And like nice. The next day, she wasn't his best friend anymore. Or she wasn't his girlfriend anymore. And then like 2 days later, she was his girlfriend again. So
mm-hmm. They worked it out.
Right. On again, off again. She took his toys. He wasn't happy. They split up. Right. She gave him back. They're good now. There you go. Yep. But
well, I was at one of the school productions. I don't know. They do like a little thing where they all scream, you know, Jingle Bells or something. And this gal sat next to me, and she asked me who I was. I was like, I'm Devin, I'm Finn's dad. And she's like, oh, you're Finn's dad.
Nice.
My that's Juliana. She's my daughter. I was like, oh, the Juliana.
Right.
And so we both had a little laugh about that.
Nice.
So, yep. The only other kid I hear about is his name is Christopher, and I guess he's I don't want to talk shit about someone else's kid, but he's apparently a knucklehead.
The class asshole. Right. I'll say right. I'll say it because yeah. I don't know the kid.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah, there's a that's the other kid. There's a few pricks. Every school's once got in a while. Him. Yep. Yeah, that's.
He's like, Bub he's had like, Christopher one. Push me, and I'm like, well, push him back. And Jen's like, don't tell him that.
I think that's like, stand up talk. For yourself.
That's what I said. I was like, I'll talk to the teacher if there's a problem.
Right. Yeah, we had Bub had a kid when he first moved up because he moved up classes early because the kids in his class that he was supposed to be in were dumber than him. I'll go ahead and say it. He was
oh, Northport.
Right, I guess dumb is not the nice word. Bub was smarter than
there we go. The He's average, advanced.
Right.
Yep.
He was smarter than the average 3-year-old. So they moved him up. So he started VBK like a full semester early. Like he started VBK this time, well, January of last year. He started sitting in with the VBK classes. And this one kid who was going into kindergarten this school year, insisted on calling him, you know, told him he was a baby and, you know, all the other kids were older, and he was constantly poking and prodding at him.
That kid.
Yeah. So me and Bub, we're laying in bed one night, and he starts crying, and we're talking about it. And I'm like, what's wrong? And he's like, he keeps calling me a baby and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude. I was like, you know, here's the problem. And I don't remember the kid's name, but I want to kick him in the face every time I see him. Like, I walk in the class to drop him off, and the teacher said something. This is the first time I spotted him, you know, by name.
Give him the stink eye.
And the teacher said something to him and told him to sit his ass down or something. And I'm like, oh, you're that kid. Okay. Okay.
And I just, like,
I picture myself kicking him in the face, but that would be wrong.
Yeah, obviously.
Right.
So you just leave it with the stink eye.
Right. So I tell him, I'm like, listen, Bub. I was like, you are younger than most of your class. So because you're smarter than your old class. You're very smart and you had to move up. And I said, you're not a baby. You know you're not a baby. And this, I mean, he was 3 at the time. So it's tough to have a conversation like this with a 3-year-old. But I'm like, you're a big kid, man. I was like, you're 3.5. You're about as tall as a 6-year-old. Okay? And what it is fart face over there is jealous. Because you're already smarter than he is. And so he's calling you a baby so he can try to be older than you. So he can
try and bring you back down.
He's trying to make himself feel better. I said, but you are not a baby. And all these other things that he says, he's a piece of shit, little fucking kid. You know, he's a crybaby and this and that. Yeah. I'm like, I want to like pull the dad aside and go, listen, fuckface, your son's a little fucking twat. And he needs to knock it off.
The next time my kid comes home and complains about your kid, I'm going to come punch you in the face for it.
Right.
So,
thankfully, this kid has never laid hands on him. And if he did, I would have the same talk you had. He puts his hands on you, you put your hands back on him. That, I mean, you got to stand your ground. Because if he hits you or pushes you and you just take it and walk away, he's going to keep doing it. Because he knows he can get away with it. But he pushes you down, you get up and punch him in the chest. He's going to think about that next time he wants to push you down. He's going to think, hey, last time I got punched in the chest, and I don't want that.
Yeah, I actually told him, I was like, if he pushes you, I was like, push him all the way to the ground. I was like, that's, and then stop.
Right. Meanwhile, Ashlyn, I don't have this problem with. Ashlyn's a little fucking sass mouth, okay?
She's a little sassy.
So, first example, tonight, I'm putting her down for bed, and I'm laying in bed with her, and she's standing up. I go, Ashlyn, lay down. No. I go, you better lay your butt down, or I'm going to smack your butt. No. So I'm like, all right, smack her butt, lay her down. She sits back up. I go, Ashlyn, lay down. No. So I got, you know, inches away from her face. I go, you do not tell me no. Lay your butt down. She puts her hand in my face, pushes me away, and says, go away, daddy.
She pie-faced you?
Right. So I smacked her hand, and she just looked at me like, for reals, bro?
She's like, are we about this? Is this what's happening?
Right. So I laid her down. I'm like, you know what? Fine. You're on your own. Good night. Love you. See ya. And she's like grabbing her blanket. It's my daddy. It's mine. Blah, 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 blah. So she's a little sassy attitude, little snot nose. So anyway, so at school, one of the teachers, Heather's picking her up one day. And one of the teachers is like, you know, we think she might have hearing problems or, you know, this or that. Because Heather's like, well, what do you mean? Like, give me an example. Because she hears just fine. We know she hears just fine.
She's just ignoring you.
Right. And she's, you know, the teacher said, a lot of times she won't say anything to them. She just stays quiet. And I'm like, it's a power play. Because when she's at home, she doesn't shut the fuck up. She's a little chatterbox. So, she, you know, Heather's like, well, give me an example. What do you mean? And she said, okay, like earlier today, one of her friends was on the ground crying. And she couldn't stand up because Ashlyn was like standing over her. And they kept saying, Ashlyn, you know, come here. Ashlyn, you need to move. Ashlyn, come here. And I told Heather, I'm like, that's not that she can't hear or that, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. It's like, that's a power move. she's letting that little girl know who's boss.
Yep.
Little girl can't get up because she's standing over. She's the boss.
Yep.
So
that's a 15-yarder right there.
Right. So I'm going to have the other conversation with her. Like, listen.
See, back down a notch, darling.
Right. Just because you're bigger than the other girls in the class, because she is. She's a fucking beast. Some guy the other day asked me how old she was, if she was 3 or 4. I'm like, no, she just turned 2 a couple months ago.
Nice.
just because you're bigger than the other girls in the class doesn't mean you have to be an asshole to them. So I've got the son who's dealing with older kids being shitheads because he's going to have that problem because his birthday is when it is. You know, he's going to start kindergarten at 5 when a lot of kids are starting at 6 or turning 6. And
yeah.
So he's always going to have to deal with that until he's bigger and can beat the shit out of somebody.
Oh, and I feel like I'm a little bit luckier in that I have 2 boys.
Right.
And they can fight each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, so if Finn does something to Archer, I'm like, Archer, don't take that shit from him.
Right.
You know?
So he'll never have that problem.
Right. And I'd say the same thing for Finn. I'm like, dude, he's going to take your stuff. You better go get it.
Right.
Because if I go get it, then he's got the fear of me. He needs to have the fear of taking your stuff, buddy.
Right.
So Finn marches right over there, snatches it, pushes him in the chest. Jed's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I told him to go get his thing, you know, his cup back or his plate or whatever it is.
Right. You're teaching him to be a man. I'm like,
Archer can't just snatch that stuff from him.
Right.
So, and it's the other way around, too. You know, Finn does something shitty. I'm like, dude, don't take that.
Yeah, you're establishing dominance is what it is. Yep. You've got to put your foot in the ground.
Yep. No farther.
Right.
So, let's see. We got the Bride Parade. Oh, the trailers.
Yes. A couple of good ones last week.
2 weeks came out. Yeah. Spider-Man. Like an actual trailer.
Yeah, like the full, 2.5-minute trailer.
Yeah, we got the villain.
Yep.
We got the, Spider-Man apparently is a little too big for his britches.
Right.
You know, so he gets knocked down a peg, and then he has to deal with the villain, who's played by Michael Keaton, no less.
Yeah, I think it's the Vulture.
The Vulture, yep. Formerly Batman.
Right.
The Vulture.
Right.
So I'm pretty excited about it. It looks like fun.
It looks fantastic.
It harkens back to the Tobey Maguire days, you know, where it was just an awkward kid trying to find his place.
Sure. I don't know. I like the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans.
I don't know. He was too Deadpool-y.
Well, I mean,
I know Spider-Man's a smart aleck. Right. I know that.
That's part of what attracts the characters of Spider-Man and Deadpool to each other in the comics, is that they're similar wise asses. Just Deadpool's a little more violent.
A little vulgar.
A little more lethal.
But I think it's going to be great. I think the kid they picked is perfect. I'm another home run casting, you know. And I told Jen, I was like, did you see Michael Keaton? And she's like, no, I didn't see Michael Keaton. And when we played it back, I was like, that? And she's like, oh my God, that is Michael Keaton.
Right.
She's like, that's incredible. He got old.
He's had a resurgence the last couple of years. The Oscar for Birdman and all that nonsense a couple of years back.
He did
something
guys?
Else recently. He was fantastic in The Other Guys.
Don't go chasing waterfalls, fellas. That's all I'm trying to say.
Right. So you just... You got a creep. What? Yeah, you got a creep.
Keep it on the low. TLC? What?
Come on, Cap. You have to know. Who just says creep? You know it's a lyric.
I love how they catch him at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Right. That so was awesome. His other job.
So Spider-Man looks great. And he's going to be like a full-on character in the Infinity Wars.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be great.
And they nailed this casting because it was Marvel and not Sony.
Yep, I agree. And Sony's got a chance now. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sony's going to get a big piece of the Spider-Man movie.
And then they can use this kid in their future movies, if you know, because Marvel's only doing they're doing two Spider-Mans and then the Infinity Wars with Spider-Man, right?
Right.
And that's all Marvel's writing for Sony.
Yeah. Well, and then they Sony take that and run with it. Build on that. Say, hey, Marvel, come up with a deal with Marvel. Like, you know, we'll give you whatever percent kickback and let's just do roll some with together. This.
Yeah. See if you can talk Fox into it. God damn it, that would be amazing.
I think the Fox bridge is burned.
I think you're right.
I think that's... And I think what sells it, and we've talked about it on the show before, is when they killed off the Fantastic Four and the Punisher comic and just stopped writing Fantastic Four. You know? So they clearly feel like Fox is just being assholes, making movies just to keep the license, and they don't give a shit to the quality of the movie, and it hurts the brand, and they're just like, fuck it, we're just not going to give you source material anymore.
Yeah, I would just love to see Deadpool and the X-Men make their way back. Even, you know, in the Fantastic Four, too.
Right. I would love to see a Deadpool crossover in the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, me too.
You know?
Even if... you know what I think would be really funny is even if they don't come over, like, to have, like, a guy who's on fire, that's Chris Evans, bumps into a guy who's Captain America, Chris Evans.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that would just be funny.
Sure.
You know, he could be like, do I know you? Okay.
You seem familiar.
Yeah. Huh.
I have deja vu all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that would be funny.
Right. But yeah, they're too far down.
Yeah.
The rabbit hole there.
Too bad.
They probably could have worked something out with X-Men had it not been for the whole Fantastic Four fiasco. And then when Marvel announced, you know, at the end of the one movie that Quicksilver was coming, and then Fox quick swapped out Juggernaut for Quicksilver in Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that just shows, like, that's the kind of fucking petty back and forth that's going on.
I told Jen about the Enhanced. We watched Age of Ultron. She hadn't seen that. And I was like, how in the fuck did you make it this far without seeing Age of Ultron?
Right.
So we went last weekend on, like, a Marvel bender. And right. I almost got her... We watched Age of Ultron. We skipped... We skipped Ant-Man. I think she had seen it already. And we went to Civil War. And she fell asleep. It was late, though. It was like 12:30. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I remember her posting something last week about how Finn was explaining to her that...
Bucky, Crossbones?
Or yeah, that's who it was. It was Crossbones was a Captain America villain. That's why he wasn't in Avengers. Right. And I'm like, how does your five-year-old know that? And you miss that.
Yeah, he's got a Lego set that has Crossbones and Captain America, so I think that might be one of the, like, a reinforcer for him.
Right.
But I was explaining to Jen that Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch were originally mutants.
Yeah, they were Magneto's kids.
And I said, you know, Marvel stole them back, basically, from Fox and made them enhanced, and I'm air-quoting...
Right,
but those are mutants. I was like, those were in the X-Men comics. Those guys, and they just kind of rubbed them into the you know, the Marvel universe.
Sure, they found a way around it.
Yep. So called them the Enhanced, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see that again.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the super serum that was magically lost. You know, that Bucky stole.
Right.
So there was a. Justice League trailer that dropped.
Yeah.
Like a real actual trailer.
Yes. It's interesting.
Good look at Cyborg. We got a good look at Flash. We got a great look at Aquaman.
Right.
JJ as Commissioner Gordon.
Yes.
We got what else do we get to see?
More Batman. Yeah, a little more Batman. Obviously. Yeah. More Wonder Woman.
No villains, really, just those alien termites.
Right.
What are they called again?
I don't remember.
I don't know. Let's call them the termites.
It was more just to further put out there that, like, hey, we're a team now. Yay.
They did not. In recently, in the cartoons and in the video games, they dug out Aquaman.
How so?
I mean, they do. They fagged him out pretty good in the Lego movies. And then in the cartoons, they're just like, he's just dim. But not in this movie. He's Jason Momoa.
He looks like a fucking powerhouse.
Yeah.
But that's because he's Khal Drogo.
Yeah. So I love he flops the dude on the table and grabs a whiskey and he's like, this guy's got it.
Nice.
And then, you know, he's kind of poking at Batman a little bit towards the end of the trailer there where, you know, I have a feeling they're going to do like with Batman like they did with Iron Man.
Right.
Where he'll design their air-quoting armor.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, because Aquaman and some of the other scenes didn't have armor. He was just, you know, wearing his cut-off jorts and, you know, no shirt.
Right.
And then at the end of the trailer, he's wearing his, you know, full-on Aquaman armor. So, you know, and he walks up and he's like, oh, dressed as a bat, huh? I dig it.
Right.
And you can see that Batman's slightly irritated.
The other one I saw, I don't know if it played before your showing of Power Rangers, but there was, is the first one I've seen, the extended Wonder Woman trailer.
Yes.
That goes like into detail, like where she came from. And I was surprised, and I really don't know if it's because she's in Lego Marvel Superheroes or in the Lego movie, but I asked Bub throughout the trailer, like when she first, and she doesn't look anything like those characters in the movie. And she, you know, smacked the wristbands together or whatever to blast whoever it was when they were sparring or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, Bub, you know who that is? He goes, yeah, Wonder Woman. And I was like, whoa, I'm kind of impressed. Because he hasn't, oh, now that I think about it, he did watch Batman versus Superman with my stepdad.
Yeah, but even then, the Wonder Woman part was,
I mean, 10 she was at long. The end, if he made it that far.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, you guys watched that with him. Okay.
Right, yeah, that one. I watched it with Finn, and he got scared at a few of the dream sequences.
Right, which would make sense.
Yeah.
It was a dark movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
the fight was pretty intense, you know, when he's wearing the big armor suit.
Right, right. He looks all demon-esque.
Yeah.
But to his credit, he loved it, apparently.
Yeah, Finney did like it. So. He really liked, what was the other one? Suicide Squad, too.
Oh, really? See, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, he liked it.
he asked
me for it the other day.
We just watched Civil War for the first time together. Because I was kind of hesitant, and I covered up his face on the part where Bucky snuffs out the parents.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's pretty intense.
It's a little violent for my taste. I don't know that I want
to. I mean, that's, yeah, execution, you know? Right. That's not fighting. That's execution.
Right, where he just kind of beats Papa Stark to death and then reaches around and chokes out Mama Stark. I'm like, you know,
yeah, that's not, yeah.
I covered his eyes and he's like, what are you doing, Dad?
I feel like I fast-forwarded that part too.
Yeah, I was like, you don't need to see this part, okay? And he's like, oh, okay. I was like, oh, still going. About 10 more seconds, maybe. I was like, just hang tight.
Yep.
It's like, then he won't know exactly why Iron Man wants to kill Bucky, but it doesn't matter. All he needs to know is that Captain America and Iron Man are fighting.
Yep. But, and you could see that. It's funny you mentioned that you could see that at the end of Age of Ultron. You know what I mean? Like the split between Captain America and Iron Man.
So, right. Right.
You know, they really did a bang-up job. But the Flash looked great in the Justice League trailer.
Yeah.
Cyborg looked a little skinny to me. I wish they could have bulked him up a little bit. But being that he's a machine, I don't know that he needs to be big to be strong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
So, and I think he should be more human, but he's really just a face with a computer body.
Right.
So, whoever landed that job got a pretty good gig because all he has to do is mocap his face in an air-conditioned studio.
Right, exactly.
And then they CG the rest of Cyborg in.
Right.
Oh, and Cyborg flies?
Does he?
So that, yeah, yeah. In that trailer, he flies.
Well, I mean...
So that'll be fun, him and Superman flying around.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Super. I didn't mean to spoiler alert. Superman might come back.
Maybe. I mean, let's be real. They didn't reboot this whole thing to do a Marvel-esque cinematic universe just to kill Superman off in the second movie.
And you know, I guarantee, you know, Bruce Wayne put like a, you know, radiation emitter inside of the thing just in case he could heal.
Right.
You know, and it just takes him 2 years to come back from that.
Sure.
Maybe he even has amnesia, you know, Wolverine style.
Sure. Absolutely.
And then we can see him fight Superman, fight all the current Avengers, or not Avengers, Justice Leaguers.
Sure.
And then I wanted to mention wrestling.
Right.
WrestleMania was on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was in Orlando.
Yeah.
Jason Eckley went.
Did he?
Yep. I kind of wish I would have gone, but I don't know anything about anything. You know, all I know is John Cena.
Right.
That's like seriously it.
Yeah. I mean, I know some of them because I've watched from time to time just to see how it is now, and I don't like it. It's highly predictable, as it always is and always has been, really, once you grow up and take a look back at it. But I probably, if I had tickets, I would have gone, but I wouldn't. I don't know what they cost.
Yeah,
what,
I don't know.
What they ended up running, and I wouldn't have spent more than maybe $100 a ticket. Tops.
I was gonna say $40 a ticket.
And that's if I'm like right down low, ground level.
First bowl, yeah.
You know, but if I'm in the upper deck and I'm paying more than $20, you can fuck right off.
Yep. Awesome.
I don't care that much. I can see him just fine up there.
Or I could just buy the pay per view from home.
Right.
Drink my own beer.
Or find an internet stream.
My Steve Weisers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, one of the big stories was Undertaker retires.
Officially, yep.
Officially hangs up the boots. And that brings us back to when we were kids, you know, like Undertaker was in the middle of his career. And that was 15, 20 years ago.
Right. I remember going to an event at the Lee County Civic Center when I was 6. And Undertaker was on that card. That was... at a minimum, 26 and a half years ago, almost 27 years ago. And that's when he had the purple boots and the purple gloves.
Oh, yeah.
And the purple, it might have been a purple hat. I don't remember if the hat was purple.
Was Paul Bearer there?
Paul Bearer was his ring manager. That was when he was in the beef with Papa Shango. And I think those two might have had the first ever coffin match. But yeah, that's, I mean... at a minimum, he's been doing it 27 years. And he was already getting put over at that point. So he's, I mean, you're probably talking 30 years. He's been in the business, which means he's got to be, what, mid-50s, pushing 60?
Oh, yeah.
So it's about that time. I'm surprised, you know, honestly, I was surprised anytime his name comes up. And I guess I don't remember who they were talking to. It might have been Sheamus. Or one of the guys Friday morning on the Mike Calta show before the event was talking about how, like, Undertaker, he's one of those guys, like, if there's somebody who can get away with just doing one event a year, it would be him. Because he's put in the time, he's put in the work, he's put in the decades in the business, like, he's earned that right. And he's still a big enough name that he could just do one event a year and still sell out.
Yeah. But,
I mean, even that, like, dude, just hang him up.
And he even was quoted as saying, I don't want to be that guy who brings it, you know, when I go on stage and somebody brings their kid to say, hey, you should have seen this guy when I was a kid. You know, he was great, and now he's just kind of hobbling around and right. Having a rough go at it. So
I mean, when we were in high school, he was in his prime. You know, like, I remember watching 8th, 9th grade, when they first debuted Kane, and watching those two go at it in the Inferno match, and then the Kane and Undertaker tag team that was unbeatable, and that's just like he was in his prime 20 years ago, you know, like it's time. It made sense. It's surprising it didn't come earlier. So
what, if you could name three of your favorite wrestlers, which three would you say were your favorites?
Oh, they were all from that era. Stone Cold was number one. Stone Cold was above and beyond. That nobody came, as far as my fandom in wrestling went, nobody even came close to Stone Cold. Because he was amazing. He was charismatic. He was an asshole. He was anti-establishment. You know, he was constantly feuding with Vince McMahon.
Yep, he was anti-hero kind of guy.
Right. I remember when he came out and tore down the Jumbotron. I remember when he drove the Zamboni into the ring, went running up the Zamboni or running up his truck and dove into the ring to attack somebody. When he cleared out the ring, when Undertaker was trying to, quote-unquote, marry Stephanie McMahon to bring her to the dark side, and he came in fucking Stone Cold stunned a couple people, hit a couple people with chairs, and just cleared the ring. He was incredible to watch. And unfortunately, he, like a lot of guys, had neck injuries, back injuries, knee injuries, and, kind of took the wind out of his sails. The Rock, obviously, he was the easy guy to like. He was Mr. Popular. And if I had to say a third, aside from Undertaker, because we've already kind of talked about him, probably Mick Foley and his plethora of characters.
Yeah, he was fun.
Because he was legitimately insane. But you could tell, like, he loved what he was doing. Like, he didn't fake chair shots. He didn't... There was no way, obviously, to fake flying off the top of the Hell in a Cell through a table on the side of the ring. You know? He had some... Mr. Socko, the Rock and Sock connection. That was amazing.
Cactus Jack.
Yeah. Dude Love. Dude
Love, yep.
Yeah, so, I loved him, too.
Speaking of, have you seen his daughter?
No.
Dude, Google that.
Yeah, I'm okay because I don't want him to show up at my doorstep with a chair.
Jeez, I follow her on Instagram and it's totally worth it.
Right. And then I guess to get away from the solo acts, my favorite tag team back in the day was probably the Hardy Boys. And that was just because they were like... They were the action packed high flying team. I remember the one WrestleMania that I actually watched legitimately on cable, on pay per view, because my buddy's mom ordered it and said, "Hey, have all your friends over." Was they had a tables, ladders, chairs match between the Hardy Boys, the Dudley Boys, and
Edge and Christian. Yep.
And
that was the first TLC match, I think.
That match was like 40 minutes long. And it was just... it was incredible. And then like the first event they had on Spike when they moved Raw over to Spike TV, when it was still CMT, that they had a tables, ladders, chairs match, same thing. I don't know if it was a three-way. I want to say it was Hardy Boys and Dudley Boys, but they had a TLC match in there too. They were fun to watch. They were incredible. Diving off the ladder, the Swanton bomb off the top rope, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, awesome. That's pretty cool.
And then, of course, they brought those guys back, apparently, Sunday. Which, again, is like, why? Your prime was 20 years ago. How fucking old are you?
And my taste is even a little bit older than what you're talking about.
Right.
I was a WCW fan. And... the tag team that I absolutely loved was the Outsiders.
Right.
Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
Hell yeah.
And those are heavyweights. They're not like the Hardy Boys are definitely not heavyweights. You know what I mean?
No, definitely not. They're middleweights at best.
A couple of 250, 300-pounder, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, Kevin Nash was probably 300 pounds at some point.
Sure.
But I really enjoyed... those two guys, really enjoyed Hogan.
Right.
You know, when the NWO started up, that was...
When he stabbed everybody in the back.
Yeah, oh man. I probably watch that clip 4 or 5 times a year.
Right.
Where I just get like bored and I'm like, you know what? I want to watch that. And I just go to YouTube, I type in Hogan Goes Heel. And I want to say it was like Beach Brawl or something silly like that. It was like in Daytona.
Right.
And there was like bikers at the ringside kind of thing.
Sure.
And he goes heel and the whole place just loses their minds.
Right.
You know, he, fist bumps Kevin Nash at the end and everybody's like, what? Kevin Nash was the bad guy and now how is he friends with Hogan? Oh my God.
Well, yeah.
They start throwing their fucking big gulps on the stage and like.
Right. And then the NWO grew to, you know, it ended up being like 10, 15 guys.
Yeah, with Macho Man and Scott Steiner and Scott Norton and Stinger.
Right. Then you had the split.
Rey Mysterio came even, I think, at one point.
Sting stayed away. He was the solo act. He was kind of like the anti-NWO. He was like the lone soldier who picked him off as he could. Because he would drop down with his bat and clear out the ring.
Oh, yeah, the lights would go.
Yeah. And then
you drop down, smash somebody in whole ass.
Right. And then Kevin Nash and Scott Hall broke off and did the NWO Wolfpack thing. And that was when Sting, you know, jumped on board and switched up the face paint to red and black and switched the, you know, the one piece to red and black and all that stuff. I remember being so fucking hyped when Sting joined Wolfpack. It's like, what? They've got Sting now. Who can fuck with Wolfpack? Holy shit. You know, and it was Wolfpack that added Rey Mysterio and, you know, a couple of other guys that I think that's when Scott Steiner went NWO Wolfpack and
Booker T. Washington.
It was amazing to watch the Wolfpack versus, you know, the OG NWO and all that stuff. It was great. Goldberg, when he came out and had the however many match streak where he didn't lose and. It's like every day he'd be bleeding from the forehead before he even got in the ring. It was just
Goldberg was great too.
Those were that was a great gimmick, and apparently you know that went away because he was a bit of an asshole and didn't like to put in the work outside of the ring and all that shit. But he came back. I think he just came back like in the last 6 months. You know they gave him another run. So
and they. Crowd loved him. They just like the Goldberg.
Yeah, once the music kicked in, that was it. The place went nuts. That's another thing. Like I tried watching a few months back, and I don't know if it was the people wrestling and there was no charisma or what, but the crowd was dead. And I'm like, you know, when I watched it in high school and the first couple years in college before I kind of grew out of it, the crowd was hype as fuck. Like, even when they weren't going just bonkers, there was that murmur. There was that steady background noise of people talking, and you could feel it building. And then a big move happens, and everybody goes fucking just bonkers. And I just don't feel it now. I don't know. But maybe I just don't notice it as much because I've grown out of it.
But that could be it.
I don't know.
So that was this weekend. Taker's done. He lives in St. Petersburg, I think.
Something like a lot of those guys live down this way.
So you want to talk about sports? We went a little long on our intro this week.
Sure. We can get into sports.
Let me pull my outline back up.
So what happens when
my outline, I mean your outline. So we were going to talk about the Final Four, but we don't need to do that anymore.
Right, because it's been settled. North Carolina won.
Decidedly.
Yeah, well, I mean, they pulled away in the last minute and a half. It was a very close game. Gonzaga was up, I want to say, you know, a point or two at the half. I think it was 3 points at the half. They had been up at 1 point, 7 points. But the second half was just like, and you know what? Like, I told my buddy at work because I left and the sports guy had to wait around for it, and the press was holding late for it and all that stuff. And, you know, one of the pre-press people came over and asked him how the game was going. And he's like, oh, yeah, the game's moving along pretty well. They just started the second half, so should be by 11:30. And I'm like, you realize what you just did, right? And he was like, what? I was like, you just jinxed the fuck out of yourself.
Yep.
You just said it smoothly. I was like, I guarantee. Now watch. It's going to come to a grinding halt. It's going to become a foul fest in the second half. And it's going to take like an hour and a half to play this half. And sure enough, about halfway through the second half, they started calling ticky-tack stuff. They started blowing calls left and right. It was just ugly. And the story became less about the players on the court and more about the referees just being terrible. You know, like, I feel bad for the kids because it almost stains the game. It almost stains their title because the referee was terrible. And it's not to say that it was, you know, all in North Carolina's favor. There were a lot of shit calls that went both ways. Like, just, it was terrible. Ticky-tack calls, phantom calls. At one point near the end, there was a scrum for the ball on the floor, and a North Carolina player had his hand clearly out of bounds while he had his other hand on the ball. And the referee is standing like 2 feet away, looking straight at it, and somehow didn't pick up on that.
Didn't make the call.
You know, like, that was just, and there's a screenshot of it, of like from the floor level, where you can very clearly see his hand is touching out of bounds, but not even close, like a full hand out of bounds while he's grabbing the ball. It's out of bounds. Sorry. They missed it. You know, and that was just kind of like, that was a microcosm of the game, second half. It was tough to watch. But I'm good on North Carolina. They almost came up short again like they did last year, the last-minute buzzer beater by Villanova. And Gonzaga played extremely well for, you know, a team that was from the WAC, and everybody doubts them, of course, because they, you know, their conference is pretty much terrible. But they put up a fight. It was their first trip to the Final Four, and they made a really good showing. So the first half, if the second half had gone like the first half, it would have been a great game. And everybody's talking about one of the best title games we've ever seen. But the refs took over and made it about them instead.
And that's unfortunate.
Right. You know, like, you know, the news is not, the headlines are not supposed to be about you. You should never know the fucking referees' names. Ever.
Unless it's Ed Hockley.
I mean, I get that because that dude's fucking jacked.
Right. That has nothing to do with the way he calls the game. It's just everything to do with the guns on his, that he hides under his shirt.
Right. The only reason you should ever know any of the officials' names is because they give them to you at the beginning of the game. The storyline should never be about how this umpire calls this strike zone, or this referee, how he calls it, you know, fouls this way and that way, and all that nonsense. It just shouldn't be that way. Referees and officials should basically be anonymous. If you're not, you're doing it wrong. Stop making it about you. So, it was a shame. It was a minor stain on the game. But the bigger stain on the game is going to be when the NCAA hammers North Carolina for all the fake classes they have and strips them of their title anyway.
Fake classes. That's awesome.
They did. They had like a whole fake course. And the only thing that has kept the football program and the basketball, basically the entire athletic program, from being smashed to the ground is the fact that the classes were open to everybody on campus. And man, somehow,
USF would have had some fake classes I could take.
Right. Somehow the Department of Education is not hammered down on them for that. But because it's North Carolina and it's one of the flagship universities in the state of North Carolina, we'll just turn the other way. Pretend.
And in the ACC, yeah.
Incredible.
I read that the Buccaneers were possibly interested in Marlon Mack.
Sure. They had him in for a private workout, and then I think there's a local workout, like a local players workout,
mm-hmm.
that they're having. Marlon Mack and Rodney Adams are going to work out there for the team and all that jazz. So, be interesting. Mock drafts, he's anywhere from, you know, late second round to mid fourth round. So, we'll see where it goes. I think we're only like 3-4 weeks away from the draft now. So
yeah, I can't wait to see where those two guys end up.
Right. And I saw something, I think it was a recap, just kind of a collection of notes that Joey Knight from the Tampa Bay Times did. And some publication has Marlon Mack as like the 12th best running back in this draft. And I'm like, I don't know what fucking tape you're watching.
Yeah, probably try like 4th best running back or 3rd.
Right. Most people have him as the 4th, 5th, maybe 6th best running back in this class. So, I mean, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I mean, not Delvin Cook, but seriously, he's good.
Right. Might be faster than Delvin Cook, even though his time was, I don't think his 40 time at the combine was as fast as he actually is, but.
I feel like I've seen him run faster in person.
Right.
With pads.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like when he was running, cause I watched it and I'm like, that's not the Marlon Mack I saw running away from everybody so many times on the football field. There's nothing wrong with being football fast.
The decision for who's going to quarterback the Dallas Cowboys has been taken out of Jerry Jones' hands.
Well, I think it was taken out a while back. You know, it had already been decided. It was just a matter of if they trade him or release him or he retires and goes to TV, which he's now done.
He will be still. You'll still see him on Sundays.
Right. They officially released him today, and he announced that he's retiring, and he's joining CBS as the number one color commentator. So he'll be on their premium games with Jim Nantz.
Nice.
So I know there have been a few, like ESPN/other people, personalities that were not happy and think it's horse shit. That a guy that just retired and has no experience gets to immediately vault to the primetime CBS game color commentary. But you know what? I mean, it is what it is.
Right.
See, Pete, he was the star quarterback of arguably the most popular team in the country for a decade. He's recognizable.
He had sex with Jessica Simpson, too.
Right. And Miranda Lambert.
Yep. So mark those down as check plus.
Right. And he's married to a beauty pageant queen now.
What'd you do, Phil Simms?
Right.
Nothing besides make a number two quarterback.
Right, asshole. So
who's Phil Simms? Phil Simms' backup was Jeff Hostetler.
Right. They each won a Super
Bowl. Yep, they did. I don't know why I remember that. Just like I remember Tom Brady was Drew
Bledsoe.
Bledsoe's backup. Yeah.
Right. And Steve. He had Chris Simms, who was a not very good quarterback, who got bailed out time and time again at Texas by Major Applewhite. So he did bust his spleen playing for the Bucks.
Yeah, I remember that.
And wanted to go back in the game, and they were like, no, something's seriously wrong.
Fucked up, bro.
And he went to the hospital, and they're like, yeah, you burst your spleen.
So you could have died.
Right. Right. See that? Like the appendicitis thing? Like I don't think I realized how serious it was. When they were like, oh, yeah, it's appendicitis. We're going to take it out. I'm like, oh, okay, let's go do this. And then, like, one of my coworkers was telling me that, like, her grandmother or something had stomach pains and didn't make anything of it, and then her appendix burst, and by the time they realized what had happened, it was too late and she died.
Sepsis, yep. It rots all your organs.
And then there was the local Tampa, apparently legendary wrestler that I've never heard of, but was a Tampa, like a local legend, who apparently died from a burst appendix. So I was like, you know, I didn't really, like I joked, like, I survived death, told death not today.
Not today.
But every time I hear a story, someone's appendix bursting and they end up dying, shut down and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, well, glad I swallowed my pride and went to the ER.
Yep.
Jesus pussy. Christ.
Yeah. And the fourth and final note I have on here.
Yes.
Who's the best quarterback in USF history?
Right. And I'll tell you where this originated. on the 24/7 Sports USF board, which is recruiting. 24/7 Sports is a recruiting service. On their board, they had a poll, and it was a spirited debate, and it was very evident who had been fans for longer than 5 years. And there were a lot of the 07 were the glory days. There was a surprising number of people who seemed to have forgotten what Markell Blackwell did with the 01-02 team that first went to Division I and beat some serious ass. So I saw the poll there. I'm like, well, let's bring it to Twitter and, you know, more eyes will see it there. And surprisingly, I didn't expect a shitload of people. You know, I thought maybe some USF fans will pass it around to each other. I ended up getting over 200 votes.
Nice.
Which is not bad. It was only open for three days.
That's a solid sample.
Right. And I think I got like 150 of the votes in the first 24 hours. You know, so I left it open for 3 days, ended up with 204 votes. And just to go over the stats, and I don't have the win-loss only because I didn't want to have to go through each individual season for Blackwell and add them all up. But Markell Blackwell, who played from 99 to 02 for USF, for Jim Levitt, played 44 games, had a 57% completion rate, 9,100 yards passing, 67 touchdowns, 28 interceptions, 1,200 yards rushing and 20 touchdowns. Put USF on the 1A scene when they upset Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh in 2001. Went 9-2 as a starter as a senior in 2002, and the only losses came to Arkansas and Oklahoma. Finished his career with 10,343 total yards and 87 touchdowns. Pretty good. Those are pretty good numbers for anybody. Matt Grothy started 39 games, 62.5 completion percentage, 8,669 yards passing, 52 touchdowns, 44 INTs, a career quarterback rating of 133.2, 2,200 yards rushing, 23 touchdowns, and that was with his career ending 3 games into the season his senior year.
Yeah, that he still had a lot of ball left to play.
The year he tore his ACL was the only year he didn't lead the team in rushing. And then obviously there's the fact that he put us on the map nationally when we made that run to number 2 on the back of the Grohawk in that defense.
And George Selvey and...
Right. So he finished with 10,875 yards and 75 touchdowns. And again, that's missing 9 games plus possibly a bowl game his senior year. So he is currently the total yardage leader in the USF history books. BJ Daniels, who I think is criminally underrated. Criminally. Yeah, 47 games, because he played 2 in his freshman, his redshirt year before they sat him for the season, got his redshirt. Came in, thrown into the fire week 1 against Florida State. After Grothy went down with the ACL tear and beat Florida State. Everybody knows that story. He finished with a career 57.3 completion percentage, 8,400 yards passing, 52 touchdowns and 39 interceptions. So the same number of touchdowns as Grothy, but 5 less interceptions. A 128.2 career quarterback rating, 2,068 yards rushing with 25 touchdowns. And once again, career ended 3 games early with a broken leg. Here's the thing. He finished with 10,501 yards, 77 touchdowns. He led the team in rushing the first year he was a starter, which was the year Grothy went down. Did not lead the team in rushing any of the next 3 years because he had a head coach who was actively sabotaging everything he did. Tried to make a great dual threat player a pocket passer. And that's exhibited by the fact that he ran for like 700 yards his freshman year and never got close to that again.
Yeah.
The next 3 years. Because Skip Holtz tried to make him a pocket passer, and that was just not his game. Let him lose. And part of it was we had no quarterback depth. So I think he was afraid, like, if he got hurt, then we're stuck putting Evan Landy in. But, I mean, you just can't do that. So, and here's the thing why I think B.J. Daniels is so criminally underrated, is he's associated with the dark days of Skip Holtz. And it's not any fault of his. Time and time again, he put the team on his back, though, took a lead, only for Chris Kosh and Skip Holtz and their conservative nature to play fucking soft pansy defense and give up a touchdown late to lose the game. The fact that we won a total of 8 games over BJ's last 2 years, not in any way, but not his fault. And people were pissed that we'd be getting our ass kicked and he's still smiling because he's still enjoying the game of football.
Well, there were lots of times where even Jen would say, he's the only one out there trying.
Right. Exactly. He gave 100% every play, every game. And a lot of times, he was the only reason we even had a chance to win. And this is not exhibited any better than the fact that after he broke his leg against UConn in 2012, down the stretch, we scored like 6 points and maybe had 500 yards of offense and got our brains beat in repeatedly with Bobby Evelde as quarterback. And that's fans for a year and a half, because Bobby Evelde played and beat Miami. People were like, oh shit, he's a great quarterback. That Miami team went 7-6, and the defense did a lot of that. The defense had a huge hand. That defense in 09 was a very good defense. JPP, you had George Selvey, you had Terrell McClain, you had Nate Allen. That team was stacked with NFL talent. NFL talent. Not just good Big East talent, NFL talent. Bobby Evelde had a whole lot less to do with beating Miami than people like to give him credit for. And that's not to say, I don't want to dump on Evelde, but the fact that for an entire season, people kept saying, bench BJ and put in Evelde, Evelde's the guy. Oh, what happened when BJ graduated? This team fell off a fucking cliff. If Taggart had BJ Daniels his first year, there's not a chance in hell we go 2-10. There's not a chance in hell McNeese State blows us out in our own house. Matt Floyd and Bobby Evelde just had no business being Division I starting quarterbacks. So like that first game against McNeese State when Matt Floyd shit the bed and then Bobby Evelde wasn't much better and then Bobby Evelde was terrible down the stretch and they had to go to Mike White as a true freshman, vindicated everything that anybody who defended BJ Daniels had been saying for 3 years. Look at the coach, not the player. He's stuck as an NFL quarterback. Granted, it was a third stringer and a practice teamer, but he's stuck with the Seahawks because he was a quality player. They could find a way to use him, but Skip Holtz couldn't. How the fuck is that possible? So, BJ Daniels, criminally underrated in my eyes.
He was at the Super Bowl this year, too.
Right.
With the Falcons.
You want to get to the Super Bowl, put BJ Daniels on your team.
Even the practice squad. Yep.
So there's that. So that's BJ. Finished with 10,501 yards and 77 touchdowns with a coach that was actively sabotaging everything he did. So then move on to Flowers, who is the now.
The Q.
He's played in 31 games, 4 of which came his freshman year. Or actually, he played sparingly in 4 games and started another. He was a completely wasted freshman year. Taggart should not have used him. Should have just redshirted him, and then we'd have 2 more years of Flowers. Imagine that. So keep in mind, these stats are with 2 actual seasons of starting and 1 season of kind of playing and starting 1 game. 31 games, 60.2 completion percentage, 5,200 yards passing, 46 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. So the touchdown to interception ratio is better than everybody else already. So there's that. Okay. 148.9 career rating is the highest of the four. 2,594 yards rushing is already more than everybody else. 30 touchdowns, and he still has to play for this season. Okay? Last year, accounted for 4,337 total yards and 42 touchdowns. If he does that again, if he does the same thing, same stats he put up last year, he'll have the total yardage record. He'll have the rushing yardage record for anybody, not quarterbacks, anybody. He would pass Marlon Mack's school record for rushing. Total touchdowns, because he's at 76 now, and 87 is Blackwell. So 11 touchdowns, and he's tied him. 12, he passes him. I think he's going to pass him. He's set to rewrite the record books.
Yeah.
So as of this moment, before this season, and keep in mind, this is with two seasons of starting, four games where he played a couple series, and one start, 7,802 yards and 76 touchdowns.
Wow.
So he's, Grothy is the USF leader in total yards. He's 3,073 yards behind him for total yards, which means if he throws for 3,000 and rushes for 1,000, he's past him. And that's with an entirely wasted freshman season. Although, to be fair, with Grothy losing three quarters of his senior season, they probably about equal up. Although Grothy actually had more playing time, I think, in those three games alone than Q had in his freshman year. It was completely wasted. Thanks a lot, Taggart.
Right.
So, the poll results were Quinton Flowers had 55% of the 204 votes. Grothy had 31%. Daniels had 10%, and Blackwell had 4%. So I ask you, Devin, who do you think is the best quarterback in USF history?
In history?
Right.
It's Matt Grothy.
Right.
Now, at the end of next year, history will have changed. And I probably will have to update my answer.
Right. I think that's fair.
But I think as it stands right now, today, if there's no more football ever played,
right,
I want Matt Grothy on my team.
Sure. And see, I think the thing that people, again, 07 was like the glory days. That was, I mean, we smashed onto the national scene. Grothy just happened to be the heart of it. People forget Grothy was a turnover machine.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he coughed up the rock.
52 touchdowns to 44 interceptions is not a great touchdown interception ratio. But the thing is, you never felt like you were out of it.
Nope. With Grothy. He never quit. He never quit on a play, not one.
He was a gunner. He was you know, a gunslinger. He was your Brett Favre type. Yeah. You know, except he could run. And I mean, that's just how it was. Even when he was having a bad game, look at the Cincinnati 07 game. We had five turnovers in the first quarter, and we're losing by four touchdowns in the first quarter. Still, at the end, Grothy's driving us down the field, had what should have been pass interference in the end zone, and gets us back. We end up losing 38-33. You never felt like we were out of that game. So, I mean, that was Grothy. So, I think when you start comparing the quarterbacks, he's considered to be the golden era quarterback.
Yeah.
And Daniels, unfairly.
Joe Montana.
Daniels is the Dark Ages. And I don't think that's fair to him. You know, if Daniels played in this offense we're playing in now, he's putting up ridiculous stats too.
Yeah, he is.
I think people forget just how great an arm he had. He had a fucking cannon. And he was also a great runner, as exhibited by the fact that he led the team rushing his first year as a starter, starting only 9 games. And then Quinton Flowers, here's the thing with Quinton Flowers. It's the Grothy effect. You just don't ever feel like you're out of it. You feel like a play is coming. And it's unfair the way he's able to get out of trouble. Like, he should be dead in the backfield, and suddenly he's breaking it for, you know, either a 20-some yard run, or he gets loose and chucks it downfield for a big gain. That's how he beat South Carolina in overtime, going for touchdown on the first play. You know, the protection starts to break down. He starts to turn one way, wheels around, turns back the other way. He's got a guy open in the flat to his right, and he says, fuck it, I'm going deep. So, I'm of the opinion, Flowers has already had the single greatest season for USF, statistically. Last year was just bananas. I think the only person statistically that was better than him was Lamar Jackson, and he won the Heisman. There's a reason Flowers is now like on the dark horse list for Heisman candidates. He's amazing. The things he does with football, it's not fair. Go put on the Navy tape and just watch that man work. That first touchdown drive, all he did was drop back and run up the middle. And gone. 70 yards or whatever it was for a touchdown. Running away. Not like he got loose and broke. He was running away. And then the Daily Stampede, which is a USF blog, did a tournament-style bracket of USF players. And the Final Four is currently on one side is Grothy versus Selvey, and on the other side is Flowers versus Mack. And one of their writers said the thing for him is, like, Mack had the elite ability to make people miss, and what was Flowers' elite ability? And I'm like, dude, same thing. You know, like that, he had the ability to make people miss. Again, watch that Navy game. He had a goal line carry where he was dead to rights. He faked the handoff to Mack, was supposed to go wide to the right. The linebacker read it. The linebacker read it perfectly. Did everything he was supposed to do. He was in perfect position. And Q put a foot down and cut straight up the middle and left the dude looking for his jockstrap. So, he does amazing things with the football. His passing has gotten better each year. So I'm looking forward. Apparently this offense is going to have more downfield passing. But I'm interested to see how he does in this offense. And if this year goes anything like last year, I don't think there's any question. I mean, we started having this discussion midway last year. Could Quinton Flowers be the best player at USF ever? If he has the season he had last year, I think it's unquestionable. And really the only argument you could raise is that Grothy did it against the Big East, which had much better quality of competition. And you consider 07, we went into Auburn, and we played North Carolina at home. And West Virginia was the top five team. And do we play those caliber of teams now? I mean, not... We lost to Florida State last year playing that caliber of team. And we don't have anywhere near that caliber of team on this year's schedule unless Illinois, you know, surprises everybody.
Including themselves.
Right. But, really, just the level of competition, that's the only knock you could have against Flowers. And I'm sorry, but I think if he was running this offense at Oregon, if he had, for whatever reason, followed Taggart to Oregon... Let's say he had graduated and wanted to go as a graduate transfer. He would do this at Oregon and just fucking murder the Pac-12. He's that good. And he's unflappable. Primarily probably because, his life growing up was not the easiest. He had a tough upbringing. You know, he's lost a lot of family. So the shit on the football field is probably, you know, not quite as bad when a play goes wrong. He's unflappable. He's even killed. You don't see him get worked up. You don't see him get down. He's just, let me go get my helmet. Let's do this on the next drive. I think he has the ability, like you said, he at the end of this year, the record books are going to say he's the best. for now, I say growthy only because Flowers could go out there and hurt himself week one. And then we're not even talking about the stat book anymore. You know? And then Growthy still owns it. But assuming he's healthy and assuming the Charlie Strong staff doesn't somehow drop the offense off a cliff.
Yeah, he will surpass.
I mean, he's going to shatter the record. He's going to completely own it. He'll own every offensive record except receiving stuff. Which makes sense because he's a fucking quarterback. So, I mean, he won this poll, and I think most of that is recency bias.
Right.
As exhibited by the fact that Markell Blackwell, who I think was the best pure quarterback we've ever had, only got 4% of the vote. And I don't think we are where we are now if it weren't for guys like Markell Blackwell. You know, like that, the 0-1 team smashing Pitt in their own house as their first Division I win, set the tone. Said, USF is here, we ain't fucking with nobody. So
there you have it.
It's unfair he only got 4% of 204 votes. And the fact that Daniels only got 10%. I was surprised it wasn't a little bit tighter. I'm not entirely surprised Flowers won the vote. But I think it, at least some of it is recency bias.
All right. That's all I got.
Yeah, that was a good spirited deal there.
It's, you got a joke for us?
I do. I do have a joke. Devin?
Yes?
What do you call a dictionary on drugs?
A dictionary on drugs. I don't know.
High definition.
High definition. Oh, I get
an HD. Yep. All comes back around to what we were talking about before the show. The whole 4K, high def, all yep. that stuff.
Well, thanks for listening to us, guys. If you made it this far, I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll catch you next week.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys next week.
Love you. Bye.